Thank you. So yes, I'm going to add a little bit to what I talked about last year, for those of you who may have been here last year. Last year I talked about some pre-study preparation and data extraction analysis a little bit. I'm going to mostly focus on the data collection today. My goal is to explain some of the hows and the whys of what we do in the BEHE lab at Michigan State University. So data collection, I'd like to talk a little bit about the eye tracker, calibration. I'm going to show you a pretest example, talk a little bit about instrument order, and some miscellaneous things. So first of all, eye tracker. We, a number of years ago, when we decided to go ahead and invest in this kind of equipment, we had looked at the eye tracking glasses, but found that that kind of data collection wasn't quite what we needed. We wanted something more quantitative, a little easier to control, and so we went with this X1 Lite eye tracking device from the Tobii company. They now go by Tobii Pro, since they've expanded into a lot of different kinds of things. So most of what I'm going to talk about is this X1 Lite eye tracker and how we use this in our lab. So calibration is a very important part of a successful eye tracking program. So you get your participant in and they're seated at a chair. You want them to be comfortable, and usually when a person comes in, they sit down and they put their arms, just like she has here, on the table. And that can be okay. One of the important things is that their chair is not moving. In this case, where we don't have any fancy chairs, I have a couple different chairs in case of height differences. Sometimes one will calibrate better in another. Sometimes as somebody sits there, they're a bit nervous. Just the thought of having to be still maybe make them a bit agitated. Now you sit still, son. You know, does that help or does that take away? Some people more so. So you just have to use a lot of good judgment in what you say. So a good angle from the eyes to the eye tracker. Lisa here, who I will just note, since this is an IRB study, this is somebody who is seated here, not as a part of a real study. Her eyes are looking right there at the machine. The eye tracker is down here, the screen. We want this angle to be a maximum of 27 degrees. Now, I will say that it would be better if this screen was lifted up a bit and that she was looking more straight on. So, is it a good angle from the eyes to the eye tracker? You may need to adjust the height of the participant or the screen. You want a solid surface, no movement, and a lack of distraction and privacy. The screen, in this case, we don't want people coming up behind, especially other participants, and seeing what's going on there. She's looking at a chalkboard, or in this case, there's not much that is of great interest. Indirect lighting is very important. When we started out, we tried doing this in a greenhouse, and you really need a canopy or something over that, but indirect lighting works so much better because we're picking up the pupils from the eyes. And we don't want people standing behind and looking there because it can sometimes pick up, this machine can pick up that those eyes and not our participants. And of course, cords safely out of the way. When the participant does, then we get the height right, and part of what we do is getting the height right is to look at this screen. Now we'll first say, those are your eyes. And that's always a lot of fun. And we want to make sure that they stop blinking, that the eye movement has stopped, and that shows that there's kind of a fix with the eye tracker. Eye tracker will calibrate, a red ball drops, goes across the screen, and they are to keep their eyes on that ball, and that makes sure that the eye tracker instrument can read their eyes. So now a pretest example. Okay, they get started. They're not really sure what this is all about. I want to welcome them, and I start talking right from the screen, and I try to look at the screen as the one who is giving it to them. They then will more likely look at the screen rather than look at me. I don't want conversation. I want them to be able to get their eyes tracked. So I'll say, welcome to the visual portion of the plant preferences study in this case. Let's get started with some directions. I'd like to give an overview. In this case, there were two parts to the visual portion. A lot of times we also have a survey portion. So I want to help them to understand that there are these two portions. They may not remember all of this, but it's the best attempt we can give here. In the first set, you will be shown 16 images of potted plants and asked how likely you are to purchase each one. A lot of good tonal inflection in the voice is always good. 16 images is also a good number for one segment. Too long a segment and they can get a little distracted. In the second set, you will be shown 4 images and asked to choose the highest quality plant. All plants are in 1-quart containers. Another important thing is if you have a lot of differences in this, if the pictures look like there's a lot of differences, they may find that a little confusing and when they're looking at the price, so we like to let them know that they're all in the same size. And once you say your response, I will advance to the next image and record your response. And I like to use plenty of hand movement. And I just keep on going with the talking more specifically, and then I'll go through that and give them an idea of the scale, tell them that they can't, what you see is what you get, and we also like to use a bullseye, a randomized bullseye in the corners before each image so that we get a start on where their eyes were and we know that it wasn't right on the center image, it doesn't carry over. And then I will give a copy of the scale and explain this to them. This is a gesture scale. 0 would be no chance, or almost no chance, really emphasizing up to you are practically certain would be a 10. So, and then a few of the in-between numbers. And you get a feel of how people are and what they understand and how nervous they are as you get through that. So the review part that comes up here, you may or may not have to go through it much. And then let's try a couple examples. On a scale of 0 to 10, how likely are you to purchase the following item? Please say your response out loud so I may record your response and proceed to the next image. I'd like to repeat that. There's the bullseye, and I'll let them know about the bullseye, and there's an image. So in these practice images, we try to have something that's not related to the plant. And I might even say, there is the image along with the price. Give them an idea that, it kind of depends on the study, what you want to do and how much information you want to give them. We usually like to go through a couple and then almost ready to go. Here's a reminder. Give them the scale again. Some people will study it, some don't care. And then on to the rest of the study. Okay, here we go. And then the question. So hopefully that gives you a little bit of an idea of how we introduce them and try to relax them and get them ready then for the eye tracking part itself. I'm not going to go into that so much. I am going to talk about instrument order, because if you do have a survey going on, are you going to give them that survey, or are you going to give them the eye tracking first? We started doing an alternating where first person in, we get the eye tracking, the second person in, we get the survey, and then there'd be eye tracking and survey and on through. We compared those groups, and we found that it does matter. The participant that comes in and does that survey first tends to have a lower fixation count and a lower total visit duration on the images. So we just generally, except for once in a while there's something that happens, but we generally keep that as our standard protocol. We believe this finding may be explained by the idea that those who look at the survey first may have been sensitized. It may be that they had a time pressure. I've been here for 20 minutes, I want to get going, and just looking at it faster. If anybody needs something to cite, we do have this written up in the Journal of Retailing and Consumer Services. Okay, some miscellaneous items. There's a lot more that we could go through, but my experience is I sometimes will have problems, and I asked Ian Christensen at Tobey, and he said what we might say, and he said, just tell them to call support. So I totally recommend having his phone number available, or any group that you, any type of eye tracker that you get, that you have that service technician's number right there handy before you do a test. We had a breakdown in our eye tracker and had to have it over, a new one overnighted. So, and again, this is, you know, we're working with human subjects. So IRB is definitely something that you need. When people come, we have them sign the IRB form. They sign one, and they get one to keep, and that's very important. We found for the record-keeping folks, and they just like to have this paper trail, so to know that they have one to keep. Now, you may have a recycling bin right next to it, and most people might put it right back in there, but you've given it to them. We always give them their incentive right away and in this order, and then we get that signature that they received that that money. And as another note, if there are any children, it's nice to have a coloring book with some crayons to keep them occupied. So, total overview, I've covered those things, and I would now like to take any questions, additions, thoughts, experiences that anyone else has. Yes. For us, we try to have something that's around 10 or 15 minutes, but this research is used in, say, a lot of internet types of things where that somebody has a task to do, and they may be a couple hours. But for our kind of studies, what we're doing right now, where there's just repetitive pictures, we try to keep it to about 10 minutes, 15 at the most. And you'll find that some people can go through those pictures a lot faster than others. We make sure that we have hold of the mouse and click it. And
can they go back?
No, they cannot go back. Do I have time for more questions?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes, Charlie.
Is there anything in the literature that supports giving them the incentive before they do the experiment?
I think it's totally an IRB thing. Is they have shown up for this study, and they're going to get that money, and they have the opportunity to leave. They don't have to stay and take it. Bridget?
Yeah, we're required to give them an incentive, and they can just get up and leave if they choose to. And we also had a colleague audited doing the survey, and she was recommended for not deliberately handing the subject a copy of the IRB. So now we don't ask them, we hand them a copy of the IRB form and then tell them if they'd like to recycle it later. But I've seen more colleagues violate IRB than I can talk about. So I think it's definitely a huge deal for the type of work we do.
So as Dr. Behe said, yes, somebody was audited, and so it is important to keep a regular routine, just make that part of the protocol, keep that part of that protocol.
One time,
I was going to get back a little bit to, as they are going through, and I mentioned that we keep hold of the mouse. It's not something I mentioned in this. But as soon as they give that answer, I click the mouse to move ahead, and they see that bullseye, and I write down their answer at that time. So, yeah, some people will just look and concentrate, and there's a tendency for some to talk out loud and kind of want to tell you why they made those decisions. For the type of research we're doing, I'm really trying to get them just to interact. I don't need so much of the input, though I will take notes. And I will take notes if they have glasses. Sometimes people with bifocals are really hard to calibrate. People with a lot of maybe mascara, if their eyelids might be a little droopy. There's a whole number of things. So your ideal participant has no glasses, is kind of medium height, and can look straight at the screen. And anyway, there's a number of those things that you pick up on, but we've had great success in most everyone being able to get everyone calibrated with our equipment.
Is your data collection on an Excel spreadsheet on the slide, or is it within the software?
So is my data collection on a spreadsheet, or right? I actually have a pad right next to me. I pre-print up an individual, you know, in Excel. I make a grid, print that out, and I have that right next to me. When a participant, I didn't mention this either, when a participant comes in, we have numbers whatever it is, maybe 1 to 100, maybe we're going to have 65 people that day, or I guess I usually look at about 30 people a day, maybe 65 in a couple day run, and they take that number, and then that goes with them, and that goes to the eye tracker, that goes to the, we have an iPad that we use for our surveys, Qualtrics, and that becomes then our way of tracking them. Now, I tend to keep a list of the names and the order until I know that there aren't any mistakes, and that I don't have to use clues to try to figure out which number goes with which. Sometimes a number can get put back into the pile and you've got two number twos, and you might be able to tell by the time, you know, hook up the time that it was this. Usually the name doesn't make so much difference, but the, you know, you have to do a lot of backtracking. But I figure if I'm the only one that knows and then it gets destroyed, we have our IRB okay. So, thank you.